Welcome to the Carol Reitberger Show, where each week you'll hear a new topic dealing with health and wellness. Carol will be taking your calls and answering your personal questions. And now, here's Carol.
Have you ever thought about what happiness is, or what makes you happy, or wondered why you strive so hard to find happiness? And then when you do seem to find it, it's difficult to sustain it. And why is that? Well, it's interesting because I have had so many people in the last month of doing readings. One of the questions that they ask me in the readings consistently is, Carol, how can I become more happy? So that's what triggered today's show. I want to thank you for joining me. Today I'm going to be talking about happiness and the science of it, and talking about not only the different levels of happiness, but also how the different personality types, colors actually see happiness, and how they strive for that happiness, and how do they know when they're happy when they're happy. So it's going to be a very, very interesting show. In fact, Nathaniel Hawthorne said, happiness is a butterfly, which when pursued is always beyond our grasp, but which, if you will sit down quietly, might alight upon you. Going to be a very, very interesting show. Again, not only for your own happiness, but I find that working with personality, it's very, very helpful to realize what your personality and how it defines happiness and what it is and what it means to you and what brings you that happiness. But it's also very helpful for you to be able to understand each of the personality's colors perspective of happiness and what they need in order to feel happy. That way it makes it easier in relationships to not try to impose our happiness on other people, because it may be completely different. So it removes a lot of conflict when we know differences of personality and how they define things and they look at things. So again, just a well-rounded perspective of happiness. I am going to be taking your calls. It's nice to have a voice back. I was saying to Rebecca prior to the show, oh my gosh, do you realize, and I'm sure any of you that had laryngitis, how difficult it is to not be able to talk? I kept saying to my husband, I have my sexy deep voice on, and he said, no, actually, you sound like a croaking frog. And I thought, well, that kind of hurt my feelings. It didn't make me happy. But, you know, the next day I woke up, the day I was supposed to do my show, and he was right. I sounded like a croaking frog. So I am back with a voice. I'm enjoying it. It is making me happy. So having that voice, I'm going to actually be taking your calls and answering questions about happiness, relationships, and your health. So if you have a question for me, you can call me at 877-230-3062. And that number is good for the U.S., Canada, and all international callers. Also, I want to let you know that I have my Your Health teleclass tomorrow. It is free. It's May 20th. It begins at 5 o'clock p.m. Pacific Daylight Time, 8 o'clock p.m. Eastern Daylight Time. The topic for the month of May is headaches. The teleclass itself is 60 minutes in length. And during this time, I share a lot of information on headaches. I'm going to be talking about the different kinds of headaches, because there are many different kinds of headaches, differing degrees in which people experiencing them. I'm going to be sharing, while it's very different than what I normally do, headaches are actually a biological origin rather than the psychological origin as a medical intuitive, the way I see things. So I'm going to be sharing more about the biological aspects of headaches and what really triggers them, and then looking at what I call the symptoms of headaches, which are the psychological aspects that are associated with it, the behavior that really can create the perfect environment from a chemical standpoint in the body that can trigger headaches. So very interesting class. I'll also be talking about what headaches look like in the energy field, how they map in the chakra system, and then again, the role your personality plays in the types of headaches that you are most susceptible to. And then after all of that, I'm going to be sharing a lot of alternative remedies, something even to the extent of being able to rub peppermint oil on the temples in order to relieve both tension and migraine headaches. So lots of interesting information. And then immediately following the teleclass itself, I'm going to always put in, like I do always, 20 to 30 minutes of answering questions, similar to what I do on my radio show. So I hope you can join me. Again, it's free. It's tomorrow night, May 20th. At 5 o'clock p.m. Pacific Daylight Time, 8 o'clock Eastern Daylight Time. You can actually go in and register on my website, www.ritberger.com. Remember, it's free. So if you suffer from headaches, please join me. If you have a friend or a family member or an associate that you know, pass on the word and let them know. I think that they will find it's an hour of well invested to be able to come up with understanding more about what headaches are. And then some of the things that we can do to be able to relieve headaches or even eliminate them without having to always use the medications itself. Also, I have an audio PDF and a printable PDF, an audio download and printable PDF of my April Your Health teleclass, which was on insomnia. It's selling like hotcakes. I don't know, when I tried to choose a show, insomnia or happiness, they're two great big topics that we're experiencing right now. Insomnia is actually the result of stress, even though there may be biological factors ultimately down the road. The first thing that creates insomnia is stress. So again, lots of information. If you're interested in purchasing either the audio download or the printable PDF, again, please visit my website, www.ritberger.com. There's an icon on my homepage. Click on it. Take you right to where you want to go, and then you can purchase it, and I hope you enjoy it. The printable PDF is actually 26 pages in length, so a lot of information. Okay, back to happiness. The desire for happiness and the pursuit of it is actually something that every person that's graces this earth, as long as humankind has graced this earth, we're always trying to seek happiness. And happiness, as Nathaniel Hawthorne said, it's kind of like that butterfly. It's a little bit elusive, but if we stop and get in our body long enough and stop and take a deep breath and look at the quality of our life and look at what we're doing and asking ourselves, are we including things in our daily activities that allow us to find those moments of happiness? Happiness is like taking a good elixir to be able to remove the blues from the body. So happiness is a very important factor in our health and well-being. In fact, happiness is a primary motivator behind a lot of the things that we do. And the search for happiness is what helps us every day to get through that, the trials and tribulations that life presents us. It's really that inner motivator, that impetus behind so much of what we do. We just think if we just keep at doing what we're doing, we're going to find that happiness. The issue with happiness is it isn't a destination. Happiness is really a journey. What that means is it's going through the trials and tribulations to be able to learn from them, to be able to change things that can create a quality of life for you. Happiness is tied not only to our emotional well-being, it's tied to our quality of life. And I always find people that say if the task that they're doing for their job isn't what they want to do, they're not happy. If they're in a relationship where they can't get on the same wavelength and talk to their partner, they're not happy. So again, happiness has to be looked at an evolutionary process, not as a destination. When we touch it, our job is to basically stay there in that happy place long enough for us to be able to really entrain it in our physical body so it can release the endorphins and the neurotransmitters that actually make our body, our mind, our soul, ourselves emotionally very, very happy. Happiness is actually multisensory, and it adds a sense of joy. There's a familiarity around it, and there's a comfort zone to happiness. Now, the issue is I would love to say that, you know, stay in that comfort zone of happiness. The issue is that comfort zone of happiness isn't something that we really look at trying to create on a daily basis. I was doing a reading yesterday with a woman, and we were talking about all this busyness that we're in right now and this endless task list. And so many of my readings, three of them yesterday, were all about feeling like hamsters in a wheel, just going around and round and round. And where can I find that happiness? And, I said something that was profound, maybe not to her, but it was to me, is, you know, just take a moment and get out of the wheel. And it's like, when I said that, it's like, oh my gosh, I could feel a relief. I could feel a sense of peace. I could feel a sense of happiness about it. And she said the same thing. So sometimes when we think about happiness, it isn't about the things that we accumulate or spending the money or, you know, retail therapy or some of the other things that we normally associate with the material outside things or other people. It's just being able to take a deep breath, maybe 5 minutes a day, where you can literally do something for you uninterrupted. And that may mean that you need to hang a sign out if you have a creativity room or a happy room, as I call it. and you have a room there, go in there. I mean, my goodness, we ought to be able to get 5 minutes out of a 24-hour day and put a sign up on the door. I have one. It says, do not disturb. I'm in my happy place. So some things that you can do just on a daily basis. And those will become habits over the course of time because you're going to enjoy them so much that you're going to want to do them every day, even on the weekends, and you're going to want to do them in more for more time. And then what you're going to do is you'll find that the happiness will actually be there. So when we actually experience that moment of happiness, it affects us mentally, emotionally, physically, spiritually, but most important, happiness actually contributes to our longevity, meaning research shows that people who are happy tend to live longer, healthier lives. Happiness can even decrease the loss of brain cells that naturally occur in the aging process, as well as increase the levels of serotonin, which reduces headaches. Serotonin deficiency, a number one contributor to headaches. So increasing the levels of serotonin reduces headaches, depression, anxiety, worry, phobias, and fear. All in all, happiness isn't only good for the mind and the body, it's good for the soul. And in fact, it's how our soul lets us know that what we're doing, thinking, and saying is actually in alignment with our divine work, our purpose of why we came here. When you think of happiness, think of it really at three different levels. The first level that we always seek in happiness is the emotional level. That may be part of the reason that we find that happiness is so fleeting, because that emotional level is a constant, it's constantly changing. One minute we can be happy, and completely following that within milliseconds, we can be sad. We can be, have situations that are pleasant. We can have situations that are unpleasant. When they're pleasant, we associate that with happiness. When it's unpleasant, we're not happy. So really looking at it at an emotional level, what we have to do at that emotional level, because emotions are really barometers that tell us the quality of our life, the quality of our thoughts. The quality of our life is whether we're in alignment with ourselves. If we're happy, we're in alignment. If we're sad, we're out of alignment. But again, emotions are a moving target, and they're added as quickly to every thought that we think. And so it's something that's difficult for us to really find that emotional happiness. So important at level one, in emotional happiness, is when you feel those momentary sense of of joy and feeling and that pleasure, savor it. Go in and spend time with it and just get to the place. It's like, oh, I'm in a happy moment. Oh, I'm in a happy place. And what you do is you actually start to retrain the brain, and the thoughts that you are creating around being unhappy, you replace them with happy thoughts, with happy emotions. The primary emotion that is associated at an emotional level with happiness is joy. Whenever you have that little joy button get pushed, what you're doing is, you know, at that moment, you are actually in your happy place. Level two of happiness is what I call mental happiness. At this level, we experience a sense of well-being and personal satisfaction. It seems like at this time, with all the quickening that's going on and all the things that we're trying to accomplish, not only personally, but collectively as a human species, we are just literally walking thought processes. And what we do is we have thoughts that lead us to a place where we actually can savor our accomplishments. We can actually feel the happiness that comes from the satisfaction of going, you know what? I just did that. That was a good job. I feel good about that. When we have those moments of satisfaction, what do we normally do is that we normally just say, next, move on, and we move on to the next situation. And we don't give ourselves that mental happiness that's needed to come in there and say, you know what, gold stars, congratulations, you actually accomplished this. And look at the good job you did, and look at the job you did for yourself, and gee, doesn't that accomplishment feel good? And boy, look at how you helped other people. In that mental level, we really have to be able to find happiness in our successes of what we do. If we see our life through just a process of failure after failure, it's going to be difficult for us to feed ourselves at that happiness level on that mental level. when we're happy at that mental level, we feel in sync. We're in the groove. We have a sense of well-being. We become fearless. We become courageous. We become highly developed in our intuition. And we really develop the attitude is like, you know what? Bring it on, world. I can take it on, because mentally we're in a happy place where we feel confident that not only the thoughts we create will be in alignment with us, but the emotions that we associate with those thoughts are going to be in alignment with us. The third level of happiness is what I call soul happiness. And you know what? The soul is always happy. The soul sees being in this physical form, being able to use the five physical senses to see, hear, touch, taste, and smell. This being in body is a very, very happy place in from the soul's perspective. When we actually look at the soul, it's a inner child that never becomes wounded or jaded or emotionally hurt. It's that child part of us that every day wakes up, and it's kind of like Christmas. It's like, what is going to be here today? The soul opens up its daily diary and it says, oh my gosh, a blank page. What do I want to put on that page today? Now, if our soul could actually direct us in what we put on that page, I'm going to guarantee you that it would have happy time within your daily activities. But the soul doesn't come in and say, well, you can only have happy time between 3 o'clock and 3:05. Now that's the mind coming in, looking at your daily schedule and saying, oh, that's the only place for happy. The soul comes in and says, you can have happy anytime. You can have happy when you sit down at the table and you look at the beautiful food that you've served, and that happiness isn't just the food, it's the presentation. It's the fact that you put this together in a very busy day. Happiness is sitting down with your kitty or your dog, with your husband, with your partner, being able to talk to them, just having discretionary time where you don't have to be mentally busy. But at the soul level, happiness is being able to engage with something or someone, something being garden, being birds, being plants, being animals, your dog, your kitty, whatever it may be, or another person, and just being fully engaged, present in the moment with them as you're in that happy place. So when we experience happiness at a soul level, we actually experience a shift in perception regarding our life. We go into a positive attitude. At this level, we feel inspired, full of energy, again, courageous. We have a willingness to engage positively in our experiences. We find ourselves in that happy place from a soul's perspective. It's kind of like eavesdropping, and it's saying to the soul, is saying, have you said anything happy? And what we do is we may wake up and say, oh my gosh, my aching back, my hurting feet or anything. The soul is in there going, well, let's have a happy moment. Boy, good to get up in the morning. Good to be able to see the new day. Just think about what you can write on that page. And a lot of people say to me, well, gosh, Carol, it sounds like at a soul level, happiness is kind of like that Pollyanna that, you know, we're just telling ourselves we're going to be happy. That is not true. From a soul's level, all it knows is happiness. The soul doesn't understand hurts or wounds, meaning it doesn't embody it. The soul sees every experience as an experience, every experience you have at a moment as being the perfect experience at that perfect moment. So from a soul's perspective, it isn't about being a Pollyanna or shoving, you know, your cares and your woes underneath the rug. From the soul's perspective, the fact that it is in this human body and gets to see through the eyes and taste through the mouth and to be able to touch and to feel at that intimate level that we can from a soul. Wow, that is a happy, happy place. So when we look at happiness, we really have to break it down into these different levels. So what I'm going to do is I'll continue talking about happiness, but I'm ready to jump right in. And I want to take my first call from British Columbia. Hi, how are you?
Hello, Carol.
Yes, thanks for calling me, hon.
Oh, how do you pronounce? Carol. It's so nice to talk to you.
You too, sweetie. How do you pronounce your name?
My first name is Philippa.
What a beautiful name. Is it a family name?
No, my mom just chose it. She thought it was nice.
Well, you know what? And it suits you well. You do march to a different drummer, and that name just, it's there. I love it.
Thank you. Took me a long time to get used to it.
Well, you know, I can appreciate that. You know, my name is spelled Carroll like a boy, and I'm thinking, no, you know, this is a female body. So, you know, honey, sometimes we have to grow into things.
That's right.
Yeah. Yes. How can I help you?
Carol, I was wondering if you could help me. I started about 5 years ago. I started to have a lot of chronic digestive problems, and my symptoms are predominantly lots of abdominal distension, bloating, and lots of flatulence in the morning. And I'm also having pain now down sort of in the lower abdominal region by my second chakra. Mm-hmm. And it's really affecting my happiness.
Boy, I do understand that. So yes. Let's see, what can we do with that? So are you working with anyone to help you with digestive enzymes or any kind of supplements, or are you doing any kind of craniosacral or spinal alignment work?
I've worked with everybody regarding acupuncture, homeopathy. I've taken enzymes. I've taken probiotics. I've had numerous medical tests, ultrasounds, and I have not tried the craniosacral. But everything that I've tried and all the money that I've spent, my symptoms mm-hmm. are still there. So
yeah, there's a couple of things that I find that I'll just go in first of all, and then I'm going to go back and explain why I asked some of the questions. One of the things that I find consistently in your body, and I've really found this for a long, long time, even as a little girl, is that your stomach doesn't have enough hydrochloric acid in it. Okay. It just by the nature, it's almost like it feels like it's a genetic predisposition. It doesn't secrete enough hydrochloric acid in the process of helping in the breaking down, creating that stomach chime, breaking the food down in a way that it needs to. I also find that in the stomach acid that is created, while again, it isn't the abundance that is needed, then I find that the pancreas isn't creating enough sodium bicarbonate to be able to take the food that you do have, that your stomach has macerated and broke down, to take it to a place where it neutralizes what acid is there. And what it also does, it's not allowing the food to break down as well. Okay. So there's a couple things that immediately took me up to your mouth. And one of the things, the first signal that sends to the stomach, and then to the liver and then to the gallbladder to secrete the different, fluids that we need in the stomach itself to help break food down, is it comes in and it's the chewing process. And I went up there, sweetie, and the first thing is I'm not getting enough production of saliva.
Okay.
So what that means is that even with the chewing, I would encourage you to chew more, chew slower, break it down, macerate it as best you can before it goes down in the esophagus into the stomach. But the other thing is that you might want to think about sipping maybe an aloe juice, or you might want to be able to, you know, look at something that you could, maybe a mineral oil or something that you could do, or maybe look at adding olive oils or grapeseed oils or something that you could maybe just drizzle on the food, just so it could give you some moisture from your mouth before it hits your stomach.
Okay.
Once it hits your stomach, what is occurring is the food is hitting your stomach not as macerated as it needs to. There isn't enough stomach acid to go in, and then also pepsin to be able to break it down. Pepsin is alkaline. Of course, hydrochloric acid is acid. The two work in combination to be able, betaine is another aspect of it that really breaks it down. So we have to really break it down before it even gets into the stomach. One of the things, too, is that you might want to, you know, steam vegetables and not eat things that are raw that take a long time for you to be able to either chew or that aren't broken down before they hit the stomach.
Okay.
The other thing that you could do is that you can look at alkalizing your body, and that's going to help you in the small intestine. My sense is when I travel your body, once the food hits the stomach, not being broken down as completely as it needs to in the stomach chime, it enters into the small intestine where it's basically digested even more nutrients, vitamins, supplements, all the different, or the minerals, all the different things that the human body needs, is that in that particular area, the food isn't being broken down, hits that small intestine, and it gets caught up and kind of lodged in some of those little nooks and crannies in it, and that can create create a fermentation. That my sense is that's what's the distension and the bloating and the flatulence,
okay,
is that the food, once it gets into the small intestine, is just hanging around too long, sweetie, and it's fermenting. That's why I suggested aloe juice. It doesn't taste bad. Chill it. It's a very, very cooling for the stomach. It's very alkalizing. It triggers mucus secretion and production in the small intestine. That moves the food along the way that it needs to, and it can prevent the discomfort. My sense is then you can get more usage from the food that you're actually working with. There are some things that I pick up that you have intolerances to, mm-hmm, that you will want to avoid. First thing is, are you on a gluten-free diet?
No, I'm not.
Okay. If you would be interested or willing to consider going for 2 weeks on a gluten-free diet. Now, that doesn't sound like punishment the way it used to, because there are so many different things that are now available. You can actually even purchase gluten-free flour and stuff to be able to make things. But if you went off of the gluten, my sense is for just a couple weeks, it'll give you an indicator as to the level of intolerance that you have toward it.
Okay.
So that's something to consider. The other thing is that I encourage you to explore probiotics, digestive enzymes again. I would normally say let's look at yogurt because of the digestive enzymes, but I'm picking up some lactose intolerance, and I don't want to do anything that's going to create a kind of a mucus buildup, not only in your digestive system, but in the rest of your body. Mucus meaning not a healthy mucus, more of an allergic reaction.
Yeah.
So those are some of the things. The other aspect of it is, and now this is going to, the reason that I ask about craniosacral, the craniosacral nerve 10, the vagus nerve, is tied to the stomach digestive area.
Oh.
And the reason that I ask about the chiropractor is when I go into your back and I start traveling down your vertebrae, the very first vertebrae at the top, cervical vertebrae 1, also called the atlas, is twisted to the right.
Oh.
When I go to the mid-spine down at the right below the shoulder blade, kind of in shoulder blade just below it, I've got the spine that is twisted to the left. That is going to put pressure on the nerves that basically animate the digestive system, tell the liver what it's supposed to do. It also has the cranial nerve 10, the vagus nerve. And what that does is that is part of the digestive process as well. It's a nerve that is basically tied to the chewing aspect, the salivary aspect of it. And it can affect us from how we break down food or if we get nauseated with headaches. So, again, something that I'm going to ask you to use your intuition. You've certainly been around the block enough times trying to work with this that I don't want to send you on a wild goose chase to be able to go and try a lot of things. But sit with your body. Excuse me. Try the things that you can from a digestive standpoint. Then the other aspect of it is then maybe go and find someone that does non-force chiropractic. We don't need to crack the spine or anything because your spine overall is healthy. We just need to get that atlas turned the way it needs to. And then it's kind of like a chain reaction. Then that kind of hitch in the get along, as I call it, and the thoracic part is going to align itself back up. Then you'll notice, sweetie, that your lumbar spine falls into alignment. Your tailbone won't be, your coccyx won't be tucked under as much. And you're going to find you'll stand taller. Your feet are going to feel better. Your knees are going to feel better. And your lower back and your hips are going to feel better.
Oh, wow. Wonderful.
So it's kind of like, one size fits all. Now, I don't want to discourage you. It may be that the first time you're going to feel great and then your body will go back to that old pattern, because one of the things that third chakra where the digestive part is, it's around personal power. You're really growing into your power, but like all of us, you have some old mental memories with some emotions that you may find you get an adjustment. You're going along just happy camper. You wake up and it's like, oh my gosh, it's back. Why is that? So what you want to do is you want to do emotional release work.
Okay.
So what we want to do is in that third chakra, we want to fill your tummy full of happy. We want to feed it happy foods. We want to get it happy. I want you to bring up things every day that you can do that gives you a moment reprieve from all the things on your task list to be happy. One single thing, one brief moment. And what that's going to do is it's going to change your outlook, but more importantly, it will shift your mind off of what's wrong with your body onto looking for something that feels good. The mind doesn't want to fixate on what's broken all the time or problem.
Yeah.
It wants to look on what's happy and what is good and what is working. And so when you do that, you distract your mind. And that's a very, very powerful healing tool, especially when it fixates on something that we end up getting to live with for a long period of time.
Yeah.
So I think that those things that I shared will get you kind of off on the right foot to take those steps forward. So, sweetie, you feel like you have some control over this instead of all this hit and miss. I'm sure that everybody that's worked with you is about as frustrated as you are, because I can feel moments where it really worked and then it's like, oh, it's back. What now?
Yeah.
So I work with it on those different levels, sweetie, and see if that will help you.
Thank you so much, Carol, for all your time. I can't tell you, I was taking notes, and I can't tell you how much I appreciate it.
Well, you are welcome. I keep hearing my one listener say to me, Carol, just slow down. And I just, you know, she's such a blessing. So I hope you were able to capture it. If you're not, sweetie, you can go back into my archives on Friday. I'll have it posted to my website, www.ripburger.com. Click on the archive, the show, and then you can either download it to your computer or you can listen to it. So it'll be up on Friday.
Thank you so much, and I'm so glad that you're feeling better.
Well, thank you. Me too. I'm so glad to have a voice. Woo! I'm back. It's better.
Sounds pretty good. Okay.
Well, sounds great, sweetie. Thanks. Have a great day.
Yeah.
All right.
Too.
So, bye-bye. So please stay tuned. I'm going to be right back to talk about happiness and take a couple more calls. Thank you for joining me.
How would you like to learn the hidden meanings behind illness and see how a medical intuitive views illness? You can by joining medical intuitive Carol Reitberger each month on her teleclass series, Your Health. Each month she'll be featuring a different health issue and sharing the contributors behind it. You can register online at www.reitberger.com. That's www.reitberger.com.
Did you know that you can rate this show on iTunes? The show you're listening to right now. It's true. You can leave your thoughts about the show, the topic, the guest. You can even leave a suggestion. Then, before you leave, rate the show. The hosts love hearing from you. So next time you download this show from iTunes, leave your thoughts and rate the show for the host and for others.
Have you ever wanted to talk with a medical intuitive to uncover the hidden meanings behind your aches, pains, and illnesses? Now you can. Internationally renowned medical intuitive Carol Reitberger is now offering personal and health-related readings. Discover your soul's purpose. Learn about the soul and the pre-birth agreements that you have with the people in your life. Readings can be booked online at www.reitberger.com. An hour with Carol can be life-changing.
If you have a question for Carol, call her now, toll free at 1-877-230-3062.
Happiness is not Happiness is an ideal not of reason, but of imagination. Maybe I need to do this a couple times. Maybe this is our mantra for the day for all of us. Happiness is an ideal, not of reason, but of imagination. It is a bit like a mirage. It shimmers on the horizon as an appealing oasis, but often has a tendency to slip away when we get closely, that we closely approach it. Boy, I'll tell you, I am just chuckling inside. I think I found my happy place around this, because one of the things in my personality is a yellow personality. I always look at everything, including happiness, from that reasoning, that logical, that analytical place. And as I'm trying to get this quote out, I'm thinking, there's a message here. It says that it is of imagination. Well, we're just all learning things today. I'm absolutely loving it. Thanks again for joining me. I'm Carol Reitberger, and today I'm talking about happiness. And we all know that happiness is something that we perceive. It is a fleeting moment. We know from the standpoint from the first segment that it is more of the journey than it is the destination. But, you know, it really comes in, and it comes in, and we have to really look at it from the individual that we are and the authentic part of who we are. And we have to look at it via our personality, because one of the things I found in my personality work, it's our personality, that core part of personality that we can't change unless we do a lobotomy, that basically comes in and determines the task we're that we are attracted to, the ones we procrastinate around, what creates our stress, how we think, how we act. So what I want to do in this segment is I'm going to talk about happiness from the standpoint of personality. Now, if you don't know your personality color, you don't know whether you're a red, orange, yellow, or green, what you can do is you can go to my website, www.richberger.com, and find out. I actually have a mini assessment on my website, or you can even go to my new website, www.whatcolorisyourpersonality.com. There's a mini assessment on that. You can just answer some brief statements as far as A, B, C, D, and then poof, you become a personality color. And then there's brief descriptions of each of the four colors. It's a great place to start because, again, so much of what we do, think, act, say, what stresses us is all around personality. If you're interested, I have books out, Your Personality, Your Health, Love, What's Personality Got to Do With It? What Color Is Your Personality? Managing People, What's Personality Got to Do With It? And within each of these books is a comprehensive personality assessment that goes beyond that little mini version, that actually you can find your color. There's detailed descriptions of it. And I can tell you, it will change the way you not only see yourself and the way that you see yourself from that happy place, but also help you realize that one size doesn't fit all, meaning not everybody is the same. Not everybody gathers information, makes decisions. Not everybody defines happiness the same way. So if you're interested in purchasing any of my books, you can do so through hayhouse.com, or you can go through amazon.com. So, okay, get that voice back. So what makes each of the four personality colors happy? Remember that happiness is directly connected to the absence of problems. That is a very important fact when we go in and we look at happiness. After all, problems create stress. Stress creates a negative impact on happiness. Stress creates negative thoughts. Negative thoughts create negative emotions. Negative emotions rob us of happiness. So I want to start with a red personality. The red personality is happy only when all of their current problems are under control. But what I have to say in that, a kind of a caveat, is that their current problems have to be under control, but not under the control that most personalities would think of it, meaning that they have them just basically locked up somewhere. But the red personality is happy when their current problems meet their standards and can be measured by them as a job well done. For the red, happiness is a job well done. No one else's standards or measurements on being able to deal with problems or eliminate problems has any relevancy to the red personality. I had to think about that word, relevancy to the red personality. So it has to be current problems eliminated by the red standards and by their own measurement. They have to feel good about managing their problems, having them under control, and eliminating them. The second color in my personality world is the orange personality, and happiness is to them is when they're able to take care of all of the people that they feel responsible for. Taking care of other people ensures adequate food, clothing, and shelter, protection from threats and perceived injustices. Oranges are happy when they are helping you with your life to eliminate the problems. Now, where the red wants to have the problems under control, the orange wants to help other people with their problems, but they always start at an emotional level. The gift of an orange in the personality world is that they will always put other people's emotional needs before their own. The gift of that is that in doing so, when they can help you with your problems, you're happy. If you're happy, it makes them happy. I think there's a saying, if mama ain't happy, nobody ain't happy. And that's really the mantra for the Orange Personality. They go beyond the call of duty to be able to help people with their current problems, to be able to give them that emotional support as well as that physical support to be able to work through the problem. So I have to go in and say I am a yellow personality. The yellow personality is seldom happy because we thrive on problems. So if we go in and happiness is directly connected to the absence of problems, you can see right then and there that the yellow is going to have to probably work a little harder on the happiness factor. But what I mean by that is that because yellows are always seeing problems instinctively, their knee-jerk reaction is to want to solve problems. But if a yellow is to be happy, everyone and everything that they feel responsible for must be problem-free. And that it must, that in the end, that can only be determined by a yellow. So let me tell you what I mean. What that means is a yellow is happy when people aren't sharing their problems with them. Happiness to a yellow is having the freedom and the discretionary time to be able to go in and think about their own problems, to be able to look at those problems, to be able to look for solutions and options and possibilities and opportunities. Happiness to the yellow is having the time to be able to think about the problems that they are personally dealing with. And if other people are having problems, they're going to knee-jerk go in and help them solve their problems. But what happens is that people become yellow becomes a magnet, and people just keep doing this barrage of problems. It's like, okay, well, thanks, you solved that problem, here's another one. Well, thanks, now you solved that one, here's another one. And the yellow can become absolutely buried in other people's problems. So when a yellow isn't in their happy place and you come to them with a problem, you say, listen, I've got this problem. Do you want me to help you help? Can you help me solve it? If they say to you, I'm sorry, this is your problem and not mine, that's an indicator that they're not having enough time to be in their happy place. What that means is, it doesn't mean to hurt your feelings. I know it will, but it doesn't mean to. But what it will do is it will take, and it's just the yellow saying, you know what? I just can't take this on right now. So if you could just take it and look for some solutions. Just give me a reprieve. Give me a little bit of time to think things through. Have this discretionary time. Then you know what? Come back to me with your problems, and I'll be more than happy to engage with you to create that happiness factor in your life. And then as a result, it creates happiness in mine. The green personality can be happy if they can put off dealing with their problems until sometime in the future. In doing so, they hope the problem's just going to go away by itself, and then they won't have to deal with it. Interesting about the green personality. I have found, and over the course of 27 years working in the world of personality, the green, a lot of the red saying, well, you're in avoidance. The green is like, no, I'm just not going to put the energy into it right now. I'll wait until I see if I get enough information. Maybe it will take care of itself. And you know what, greens? It does. It does. It does seem to have a way to be able to take care of itself. What makes them happy is someone else dealing with their problems. That way they don't have negativity in their life. Consequently, they're happy, and it's kind of a moment-to-moment thing. When a green has a problem, there's a natural instinct in the green to seek out a yellow in their life. If they can't find a yellow, they're going to seek out an orange. In the yellow standpoint, the green comes in and says, you know what, I've got this problem. The yellow asks what it is. The problem is then identified. The green goes off on their way. The yellow is left holding the bag to solve the problem. Now, if the yellow is in a happy place, good deal. If they're not, it becomes a burden. If the yellow, the green cannot find a yellow, they go to the orange, and then they share with the orange, you know, I've got this problem. It makes me feel bad. The orange picks it up, worries about it, works on it, comes back to the green and says, basically, you know what? I think I came up with something that can make you happy. And that's the way it works. So individually, we define happiness differently by personality color. We actually experience it differently. And we actually use other personalities to help us in the problem solving. Because remember, happiness is the absence of problems. We find other personality colors that can help us with the problem. Either the red to take it on and just basically get it under control and eliminate it. Now, for the green, that feels like control. So there's a problem. So again, you have to really understand that happiness isn't isn't a one-size-fits-all. So I hope that what you can see from just sharing this personality work is that if you want to gauge your happiness, truly gauge it. Gauge it on your own needs, not gauge it on what maybe happiness looks like on a television or in a magazine, or whether you're shopping with girlfriends or having lunch or doing some sport that you like. All those things are happy, but we have to be in a present place and present moment doing happiness the way that we need to. Otherwise, we're going to find that happiness is like that fleeting moment. It's just going to always be a hat that we're going to chase in the wind. So, in closing with that, I want to say that happiness is like a garden. Sow the things that make you happy, rid the garden of things that make you unhappy, and every day tend to the garden by feeding it with positive thoughts, water it with your imagination, and stop long enough to sit at the garden and marvel at the beauty that you've created. So, some suggestions on happiness. Sit down, write your own personal definition of it, then write down what makes you happy. I know it's difficult to do that. Sit there long enough until you can. And now I want you to create a daily action plan of the things you can do every day, even if it's 5 minutes, in order to help you create the happiness that you're looking for in your life. Oh, goodness gracious. Here we are again. Woo! It's back. I love this voice. So what we're going to do is, the kind of the mantra for the week is, I am a happy, healthy, whole person. I love my life. I love me, and I love being happy. Those are things that we can say over and over and over again and then do something for it. Okay. What I want to do right now is I want to jump in. I want to take another caller, Shireen from New York. Hi, sweetie. How are you?
Hi. Yeah, this is Shireen. Hi.
Hi, thank you. I've tried calling a couple times. I'm so glad you were able to come here today and so forth. How can I help you, hon?
Thank you for taking my call. And I love this topic of happiness. Great.
We can all use a good dose of it now, can't we, sweetie?
Definitely. I've been in and out of hospitals lately, seeing different doctors and specialists for a condition that they tell me now is pulmonary hypertension. This is regarding my heart and my lungs.
Correct.
And I'm about to go back into the hospital for another test.
Okay.
And I was calling to see if that's even necessary, it's as if the specialist is still searching for an answer, and they tell me my condition is genetic also.
That is accurate. It is. So let me go in, and I am pleased with the diagnosis. When I first got your email, I could pick up the confusion around it. When I first reached out to you, I could find so much confusion around it. The diagnosis with pulmonary hypertension is an accurate diagnosis. Now, it isn't my place to say it is or it isn't, but I can tell you that it's in alignment with what I picked up from the standpoint of having the permission to touch your energy field based on your email outreach. In this particular case, it is genetic. It is something that I have picked up, this chronicness with this inability to be able to get the lungs to feel the way they needed to, the shortness of breath, the feeling of the pressure on the heart itself. The one thing about the test is that I would encourage you to go to your specialist and to have this next test. And the reason for that is that I can tell you that the doctor is getting close to being able to come up with a treatment and a protocol that can help you with this. And it's something that is really hit and miss. And the reason for that, sweetie, and the hit and miss, and I'm sure of the frustration, is that a lot of the different symptoms you had could have been congestive heart failure. It could have been a respiratory infection. It could have been a chronic bronchitis. It could have had some of the aspects of asthma to it. So the doctor had to very methodically go through the process of elimination more than anything else. the fact that they are in the place where they are now with the hypertension aspect of it, what they're going to do is they're going to look for a couple of things. They're going to look to make sure that the valves are working the way that they need to. The valves that are tied to the pulmonary aorta, they're going to look at to be sure that we don't have any kind of regurgitation or any kind of prolapse in those valves. The other thing they're going to do is they're probably going to look at your CO2 levels to see if you're getting too much carbon dioxide, something that's occurring there that's causing that inflammatory response in the lungs itself. They're going to go in and they're going to look for inflammatory responses. Do we have any mild, low-grade form of infection? Now, that may not show up exactly in the test that you think that the doctor is going to take, but the doctor is going to be able to go in and look at things at a deeper level. And it's more, honestly, it feels with the doctor, Shireen, that it's more a process of elimination, sweetie. I think they've got it right. Again, when I touched you, that would have been the direction that I would have gone as well. But I think that they're going through now, not trying to figure out what it is, but what is the process of elimination? Where do we go and look? And then how can we go in based on the information and figure out what kind of protocol of healing can be worthwhile? And based on that, what they may do is they may look at medications that would be able to help with the inflammatory response, that low-grade sense of infection that, you know, it seems like this is, it's what triggered it to reach this place in the crescendo that it's in right now. They'll be able to go in and just look at, does there have to be any kind of modification of lifestyle? Does there have to be any kind of modification of the heart itself? So they're really doing the process of elimination. So if any of that rings truth, because it always comes back to you, if any of that rings truth, then what I would encourage you to do is I would encourage you to do some preliminary work prior to going in for that test. The first thing is the test itself goes back, going to the hospital goes back to when you were a little girl. And so you've got a lot of angst. So we first of all need to change the hospital energy. Ask the doctor if it's possible for you to wear earphones. You don't want to hear what's going on. You would like to be able to have happy music for you. You would like to be able to create visualizations of the test going well, then being able to find out what they're looking for. What they're really doing, and you can start the process from my world as a medical intuitive, we want to eradicate the sadness in your life. And so what we want to do is we want to pack whatever we can, happy feelings, happy mantras, happy affirmations, as if those affirmations, if those visualizations, if that music has already told the body, listen, this is okay. It's going to take care of itself. It's something that I'm going to be able to deal with, live with, and it is not going to shorten my life or interfere with my life to the point where I can't do what I'm happy with. So there's a lot of pre-testing, or I even share it with people, pre-surgery situations that we can actually use to prepare the body, neurotransmitters, the serotonin, the dopamine, the endorphins, all the different aspects of the body that put us in that calm place to be able to go in and to allow the body to just engage in a trusting, loving way to be able to find out what is needed.
Is there anything else I can do as far as my diet or...
Yes, you can. And good, intuitive you are. You know, you're going to go on the circuit with me as a medical intuitive, my love. One of the things that you can do is you want to start right now, because any type of testing that has any form of invasiveness, whether it's a psychological invasiveness because we're afraid of the test, we're afraid of going to the hospital, or physical invasiveness, you want to work with your immune system. You're going to want to eat more greens. You might want to look at wheatgrass. You might want to look at antioxidants, things that are going to support your immune system so it will respond in a in a healthy way, meaning it'll create an inflammatory response. That's what it does, but it won't stay in that place for a long period of time. The other thing that you'll want to do is I encourage you to go in, and for the short period of time, I want you to minimize the fat that you eat. Your gallbladder seems to have difficulty with assimilating and digesting fat. So what you'll want to do is, do you eat meat?
No.
Okay. So where are you getting your fat? Where are you doing grapeseed? Where are you getting your fat, sweetie?
I just purchased some more, but I do flax oil.
Okay.
I just purchased some flax seeds. My oils, I didn't know that I ate much fat at all. I have like sunflower oil.
Yeah. There's a couple things. Use your intuition again. And if you have someone, there's an oil that you're eating that your gallbladder is having difficulty breaking it down. The flaxseed oil felt okay to me. The flower seed oil, I got a little bit of a twinge. I keep getting this message, explore coconut oil. Oh. I'm not sure why, honey. This is not my area of forte or my strength. You know, I'm a medical intuitive, more of a diagnostician. So I encourage you to talk to somebody about it. But it just feels like for some reason, I don't know if it's your body is saying, you know, just mention coconut oil, Carol, and that's about the best I can do, honey. So look at that as well.
I ran out a while back. I was thinking about coconut oil today already.
Oh, see, you're sending to me. I am loving this. All right. So, but what we want to do is let's work on the immune system. Let's pack the spleen full of happiness. The stomach, we're going to go to a happy place. We're going to work at some foods that are going to support your digestive system. That are going to support the immune system. You will want to do things that are red, blue, purple in color as far as antioxidants. Very, very healthy for you. So why don't you look at those things, sweetie? I hate to cut you short, my love. It's been a pleasure talking to you, but you know, everybody, I've run out of time. And so, Shireen, if you have more information, sweetie, just send me that. Light and love to all of you. Have a great week. Talk to you next week. Bye-bye.
You've been listening to The Carol Rideberger Show. Join Carol next week and every week at 10 a.m. Pacific Time on ContactTalkRadio.com. To contact Carol, visit her website at www.rideberger.com. That's www.riteberger.com. See you soon.